Am I as good looking as I think I am?
I wonder where normal people find friends.
Where would I find out how to be a good dad?
Should I be taking my kids to church?
What is up with my nose hair?
Crossroads Church. Real people asking real questions.
Crossroads Church is a community of people across the country, trading isolation for friendship, insecurity for hope. We're pursuing God in the midst of our mess, a God who loves us and takes us on incredible adventures. Check us out.
Well, hey, welcome to Crossroads. My name is Justin, and we're glad you're here. Hey, if you found yourself in this place for the first time, whether you're online or you're here with us today, but we are a community of people who have been changed by the love of Jesus. And one of the ways we like to express that is through singing. So we sing songs to God and about God. We also sing songs about who we were before we met him, before we found his love. And so that's how we're going to start today. Why don't you stand with us and sing with us, all right?
I was buried beneath my shame. Who could carry that kind of weight? It was my tomb until I met you.
Yeah.
I was breathing but not alive. All my failures I tried to hide. It was my tomb till I met you. You called sin was heavy, but chains break at the weight of your glory. I needed shelter, I was an orphan. Now you call me a citizen of heaven. When I was broken, you were my
yeah.
holds on, never separates. Your love never leaves or walks another way. It always pursues, it's the reason I sing. Well, I sing 'cause you're good, yes. I sing of your kindness. I sing 'cause you're faithful, you never let go. When I'm on my own, I'm never alone. When I'm on my own, I'm never alone. Love for the empty, the broken, love with purpose, gave him a name, Jesus. You tore out your heart just to walk in my place. Now I'm a child of God with your blood in my veins. And I sing 'cause you're good, yes. I sing of your kindness. I sing 'cause you're faithful, you never let go. When I'm on my own, I'm never alone. When I'm on my own, I'm never alone. Even when I stumble, and though I may fall, even when I'm broken and forced to crawl, and even when I'm empty with nothing to show, I sing 'cause you're faithful, you never let go. Yeah, even when I doubt you, and though I can't see, even when the future is a mystery, and even when I find myself wrong, of your kindness. I sing 'cause you're faithful, you never let go.
Hey, I'm Kyle. I hope you've enjoyed your experience so far today. We've got an amazing message coming up for you in just a few minutes, but I want to let you know that there is more great stuff that happens every week at Crossroads. This is Allie and Latasha, the hosts of the IKR podcast. If you want to know what that is, I'll ask them, what is IKR?
I know, right?
That's what it means.
That's literally what it means.
It's what the young kids text. They text IKR.
Or I know, right? I regularly had people say to me, I want you to talk about this. I want you to address this. And a lot of those coming toward me were unique things about women and in the lives of women. And we don't often have the luxury of doing that on the weekends. So we were looking for another outlet, knowing that women were asking for content, for insights, for things that were directed specifically to them. Mm. So we decided to experiment with a podcast, and it's gone.
It's been fun.
Amazing.
Season three.
Yeah,
it's gone, season three. Incredible. Yeah. Like 100,000 downloads.
More than that,
right?
Now.
Come on,
yeah.
More than that.
200,000?
Yeah. What do I got? 200,000.
Over 200,000.
Yeah, and counting. Yeah.
Wow.
So thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
Our mom downloaded it. That's all your moms. It's your moms and me.
Our moms and Kyle and my husband.
That's right.
Yeah.
200,000 times.
Yeah, 200,000 times. So we have listeners all across the country.
Yeah.
We get a lot of interaction. If you're not following us on Instagram, you should be at IKR Podcast. We get lots of, we do a lot of bonus interaction with listeners on Instagram. We put up a lot of bonus Sweet. Content and stuff there.
Awesome. What are some of your personal highlights doing the podcast so far?
Oh, you know what? It's super exposing. I mean, what we know about women is that they want vulnerability. And so the only way that they will continue to listen is if we expose ourselves. And so I feel like Allie and I have done a really great job of kind of filleting ourselves and just kind of cutting ourselves open and allowing people to react.
You have a new season that comes out. When does it come out and where can we get it?
So episode zero is out right now. So you can listen right now to episode zero. It's about 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it sets the scene for the entire season. And we have a couple of drops of just little snippets of episodes. Like the most, of course, the abnormal, crazy things that you hear. So that's that. And then our first full episode pops out next week.
This next Wednesday.
Awesome.
That's right.
And there'll be 10 episodes with probably some bonus episodes. So a full season of content. Lots of really good guests. I love our guest lineup this year. And the topics we're hitting, I think, are going to be
a lot of fun.
Give us like one guest. Tease one guest for us that we should be really looking forward to.
You do one, I'll do one.
Okay. Should we say it at the same time? No, I guess that's not helpful. Well, because I was going to say, we interview a former porn star. She was in the sex industry, and she has given her life to Jesus, and she has an incredible story of transformation. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. It's really crazy.
I love that one, too. And then Chuck Mingo, our very own Chuck Mingo, is going to make an appearance.
How did Chuck get to be on your podcast?
I know, right? Chuck was invited.
That even listens. I listen to it.
I know. Chuck was invited, so he will pop up on an episode this season, and it's a lot of fun. That might be one of my personal.
Is it like Chuck's insights into women? Is that kind of
no?
Okay.
Not gonna be any good.
Hey, if you are a woman at Crossroads or a man, either way, and you have not yet listened to the IKR podcast, do yourself a favor. Download it, listen to it, subscribe it, share it. It's really freaking good. You guys are doing amazing. Well, hey, at Crossroads, there is a team of people that you are invited to join today if you want to. It's the team who so believe in the mission and movement of what God's doing in and through Crossroads that we give each and every month to fuel that mission that supports things like the IKR podcast, like hundreds of thousands of downloads and people hearing about Jesus in a language that maybe they can understand for the very first time. It also goes to support things like this video that you're about to see in just a minute. And if you want to join that team, super easy. Go to crossroads.net/give, set up a one-time, make a one-time gift or set up a recurring gift. Whatever you want to do, check out this video about where some of the money goes.
Right now, we're standing in the restaurant called Social OTR. It's the second part of our culinary training that's happening at CityLink Center. And then from here, they'll go out into the culinary industry and fill a cook shortage that Cincinnati's facing right now because we have so many great restaurants popping up all over the city.
You do your first 4 weeks at CityLink, and that's where you learn like your culinary math, you have nutrition classes. They also have employment classes. So it's not only just the culinary aspect that they're helping you with. They're also trying to make sure that you are sufficient to be able to get to, you know, to the classes. They make sure that you might have bus passes or gas cards or whatever. They put everything in place so that you can succeed. There's like no room for failure because there's so much help there.
It isn't just you're seeing folks get a job and that's great. No, this actually is breaking a generational cycle of poverty. For kids and grandkids, their kids and grandkids may never know the experience that their moms and dads had, but that is because of the generosity of this community and what they've done. I'm standing in the building that was funded partially by the I'm In campaign, which is pretty amazing. So it just goes to show that those dollars in action are truly impacting lives, serving our community, and we really feel called that we have to be good stewards of those dollars, and we have to do things that are going to impact our city, but do it in a way that is honoring to God and honoring to the Crossroads community.
I want to give you guys the biggest thank you from the bottom of my heart. I mean, this program, like, I want to cry. Like, this program means so much to me. Like, all that I've been through in my life, and for me to literally have only 2 weeks left, I kind of don't even want to leave, honestly. Like, if the program was longer, I would stay as long as I could. But I feel like you guys have a great thing going here. A lot of people are benefiting from this program, and it's changing a lot of lives.
Yeah, today I'm going to be a coach. I'm going to be somebody who's kind of going against the grain of spirituality here in our country. I don't know if you recognize it or not, but life is difficult. It is. And I've had two trips where I've seen this really clearly recently. I'm going to refer to both of them. One is a trip I had to New Zealand. The other one is a goat trip I just got back from Nicaragua with. And both of those trips, I experienced difficulty. Today is basically about the spirituality of difficulty. If you could subtext this message, it's the spirituality of difficulty. See, normal is, I don't want any difficulty. I don't want any pain. I don't want anything that's going to bother me. That's normal. If you want to be normal, then just stay there and live there. But if you want to rise above normal, if you want to get above to a new place, you're going to have to look at difficulty differently. You're going to have to embrace it. There is a lid on all of our lives, and that lid is whatever degree of difficulty and pain you can handle. If you can handle this much difficulty, then you'll have that much of God. If you can handle this much difficulty, then you'll get that much of God. If you can handle this much, you'll get that much of God. There are these people in the Bible who we know as heroes of the faith. They're heroes because every single one dealt with difficulty. And when difficulty came, they didn't freak out and go, oh no, what's happening? They recognized it was something that they had to get through. And you don't see this today in pop spirituality. You'll never find this in one of the teachers that's on PBS. You'll never find this in one of the spiritual podcasts associated with NPR. It is nitty and it's gritty and it is for real. I like conversion stories. When I was younger, conversion story basically looks like this. Here's my life the way it is right now. Bam, I met Jesus. Woo, wow. And now, man, my life has just taken off. That's a conversion story. They're pretty inspiring to hear. We don't like to even hear about conversion stories today. We don't want to convert anybody today because we hate that word because it means that you have to change. No, no one should change. Aren't we okay just the way we are? No, we're not. We're not okay just the way. God loves us just the way we are, but he loves us too much to allow us to stay in the place that we are. And our culture doesn't want changing. Just stay the way you are right now. Our culture doesn't like that. What's popular right now is deconversion stories. A deconversion story looks like this. A person talks about how they were spiritual, how they had Christian pedigree, whether it was seminary degrees or family was all Christian. They established a thing, and then they established difficulty came, and it caused me to question, caused me to search, caused me to wonder why in the midst of this difficulty. And then the next step is, and all these people over here, they all disowned me. They didn't want my questions. They were very threatened by it. And so there I left that all behind, and now I'm a new enlightened person, and I'm so glad that now I have this different mindset that's all wonderful. And the one common theme comes up pretty regularly in deconversion stories is the inability to categorize difficulty. The inability to handle difficulty. Because if there's difficulty, there must not be any God, right? Or if there's difficulty, then God must not care about me, right? No, not necessarily. When there's difficulty, there is something that God is using to get us to a new place. The lid on your life, my life, will always be the degree of difficulty that we can handle. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 5, verse 8 to 9, it says this, although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered, and he became obedient, he became perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. This is Jesus. This is Jesus he's talking about here, and while he's a son, he learns obedience. Now, this is a really difficult verse to look at. What does it mean for Jesus to learn obedience? Does this mean that Jesus was disobedient one time? No, it doesn't mean that. It's a different kind of obedience he learned. If Jesus was ever disobedient, then when he goes to the cross, he dies for himself and his own wrongs instead of your wrongs and my wrongs. Because the good news is Jesus paid the punishment of anything that's due to come our way because he got punished even if he didn't deserve it. That's good news. You can do a little clap for that if you want. Yeah, but good news. We don't have to have the difficulty of eternal punishment. Woo-hoo! Wonderful. What's it talking about here, though? It's saying that not only was Jesus saying no to things he shouldn't do, but there was a stepping out, a going through to a new place as the Son of God that he did and he learned while he was obedient going through difficulty. His life is one theme after another of difficulty and hardship and pain, again and again and again. Whether it's birth, like that's painful. I've seen that like three times. That's very painful. Birth in and of itself. His hometown rejecting him. His family not understanding him. His emotional sensitivity when he wept on a number of occasions just out of empathy. His friends all abandoning him, the difficulty of his friends all abandoning him at the end of his life, let alone the physical difficulty of nails through his hands and his feet, and he endures the difficulty. And because he endured that difficulty, the lid on his life was raised to where he has a name that's above every name. In the book of Philippians chapter 2, it says this, therefore, God highly exalted him and gave him the name above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow. It's true. Experiment for you to do sometime. Next time you go to a basketball game, there's a tournament going and you're out where people are getting their hot dogs or some other place, or maybe you want to do this out in the lobby when people are getting ready for a movie. Just do this. Just say louder than anybody else's. Just go, John! And watch what happens. People are like, Maria! Nothing will happen. And then do this. Jesus! People are going, whoa. People are looking around like, who is saying that? What is it about that name? It's just consonants. It's just syllables, right? Well, it isn't, because it represents somebody going through difficulty. In the Philippians 2 that I just read there, it says that Jesus was so humble, a humble servant, he laid down his life, even death on a cross. And therefore, God, it says in the original language, he hooper exalted him, which is where we get the word hyper. He hyper exalts him. Why? Because he went through difficulty. So if you and I want to raise our lives, if we want to elevate our life, the way we elevate it is to endure difficulty, the spirituality of difficulty. If you want to elevate your physical capacity, you will have to endure the difficulty of burning lungs while you are running, to expand your cardiovascular ability. If you want to expand your mind and your knowledge base, you're going to have to endure the difficulty of having red, itchy eyes as you stare at a page and you read. If you want to raise the level of your marriage, you're gonna have to endure the difficulty of maybe marriage counseling or some such thing. Our embracing of difficulty will always determine the heights that we can soar. Now, I want to give us four disciplines in understanding this. And I got to tell you, even disciplines, like I was really working hard. I didn't want to use the word discipline because a discipline is like an awful word, right? Who likes discipline? Anybody in here? Anybody like discipline? No, none of us do. So I thought, there's no way I can have 4 points that are all about discipline. And I realized, there it goes again. I'm doing it right now. I'm trying to tone down the difficulty, trying to find a word that isn't difficult other than discipline. So now we'll call it what it is. It's a difficult word, but it's a real word. I'm gonna give you 4 disciplines today. Number one, the discipline of definition. The discipline of definition is when you define who you are and where you are. This is so weird today because no one wants to be defined by anybody. No one wants that at all. We even have parents that don't want to define a six-week-old boy as being male even though he has a penis. No, I don't want to define him. I don't want to define him. I'll let him figure that out for himself. We're so afraid of defining anything. We don't even want to define ourselves. We're not even sure who we want to grow up to be. And we keep asking other people, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because we're trying to get ideas for ourselves. we're just not sure. But you have to be able to define it. Defining the situation is the important thing for every relationship going forward. This is one of the things for Lib and I, it was really difficult when we were married. I didn't want to define the relationship. I was dating her for months, and I would leave after dating and after a night being with her, and I wouldn't even want to tell her, okay, I'll call you tomorrow. No, I don't want to tell her that. That's like a commitment. I don't want that commitment. And then finally, after a few months, she sat down and said, hey, I need to know, like, what is this? Because if this isn't anything, I might need to be moving on at some point. What is? I didn't even want to define that we were dating, let alone define anything beyond that. But defining things is everything. Defining who is your best friend, who are your friends, who are your inner circles, defining you're my boyfriend, defining that we're engaged, defining and being definitive, saying I am divorced. Some people are divorced, are still not able to define the fact they are. Sorry, it's over, it's done. God can restore anything, yes, I know. And for your own personal and intellectual sanity, you have to recognize it is over. You have to define that. For you to go anywhere else, reality has to be defined. In the book of John, we see that God actually defines us. God defines us. In John chapter 1, verse 12, it says, but to all who did receive him, that is Jesus, who received Jesus in their life, who believed in his name, the name that is exalted above every name, he gave the right to become children of God. I will say, well, aren't we all children of God? No, we're not all children of God. It's like saying, well, isn't everybody in the Tome family? No, everyone is not in the Tome family. Isn't everybody an American? No, everybody is not an American. There are those who come into the family of God through Jesus, and them God defines as, you are my child. And by the way, my children have endured more difficulty under my watch than any other children in the entire world. My children have. In fact, there's been things I've intentionally put before them that were difficult, that were meant to grow them up. I start telling some of these things and I realize that I'm glad they're grown now, because someone would have called 911 kids on me, the things that I did with my kids. They turned out great because I put them intentionally through difficulty, or when they were in difficulty and I wasn't me who did it, I didn't go and rescue them. I allowed the teacher to continue to make bad mistakes to put my kids' comfort factor at risk. So this is the way it happens sometimes. Difficulty, we have to define it. We love tests, we do. We love things that are surveys and tell us something about ourselves. How many of us have done Myers-Briggs? If you've done Myers-Briggs, just tell a person beside you what your four letters are. Tell them right now. What are your four letters? Right now, the introverts are not liking this at all. Yeah, you can find out if you're an extrovert or an introvert, if you're a judger, perceiver, yada, 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 yada. It's fascinating. We like finding this out. Like, ooh, interesting. When you define yourself that way, it's helpful to go forward. You understand why you behave in meetings, what kind of jobs or positions might be good for you. The hot one recently, it's not a recent test, it's been around for a long, long, long time. It's getting a lot of play currently, is the Enneagram. Like, oh, I'm a two. Oh, no. Oh, sixes freak me out. And I don't like those things. Those are all really, really good. But you know what's been missing for a long, long time? What's been missing is a test, a survey that defines you and tells you where you are spiritually, that tells you how spiritually mature you are. I've never been able to find a test like that. I've never seen a test like that. If I have, I've forgotten it because it wasn't good enough for me to remember it. But there is one now. We've actually created it, and we've been working on testing it and refining it. We've had focus groups, pilots, all kinds of stuff for over a year now called Wayfinder. Wayfinder. It helps you define where you are spiritually right now in four categories. A seeker, a receiver, seeking like, I think God's out there, I think I want him, or her, it, whatever that is, I'm seeking, or receiver, I've received Jesus in my life, or follower, I'm following, I'm making his choice, my choices, or producer, I'm actually producing the life of Christ and the life of others. And then there are sectors of maturity under each one of those four. I'm so excited about this. I am incredibly geeked out about it. I'm telling you, this is one of the most important things we've invested in for you and your walk with God, for you and your growth. And I'm telling you, it's really, really good, and it's really, really accurate, and it's really, really difficult. When people go through this, they're like, oh, man, I don't want to answer that question. Ooh, I am sure the number of people who are going to start that online assessment are not going to finish it because they're just going to say, this is too uncomfortable for me to answer this. And you've justified that you don't want to grow because growth is about difficulty. It's about going to a new place. We have some short little snippets of some folks who've recently benefited from the Wayfinder survey. Let's hear their story.
Taking the Wayfinder was kind of a springboard for me.
Nowhere have I ever seen a method of evaluating a person's discipleship and spiritual progress. And I've been a Christian for over 30 years.
Some of it was like really obvious things that like, yeah, that makes sense, that spiritual stuff. And there were a few other things that I'm like, I don't know that this is really what I was expecting, or I didn't think this was a part of spirituality or a part of faith or anything like that.
And it just kind of gave me a gauge on where I am in the different areas of my spiritual journey.
Anytime you have a metric to measure yourself against, it causes you to do things that you would not do if you didn't measure yourself.
To have a better view of who you are is never going to hurt you. The good friends are the ones who tell you you got food in your teeth. Like, it's that kind of thought process.
It kind of pointed me into an area where God has been directing me for a long time. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have been for almost 12 years. So the Wayfinder was just another chance for God to tell me, this is where I have you. This is where I need you. It's okay for your focus to just be in the home.
I took my small group through it. It took us into some areas that we might not have gotten to otherwise in terms of, like, just a little bit more depth when you've got to reflect on yourself.
I was challenged to basically look further and we'll go outside of my comfort zone. And actually, I did take some steps. I got involved in some other groups, like the local community. I also decided to basically become a tutor at the local elementary, which is right down the street from me.
I just never thought about the poor as anything having to do with spirituality. That was one of the things that I started to think about more. How could I use what God's blessed me with to help bless others? You know, I've been more consistent in journaling and more consistent in reading lately, and I feel like I'm closer to Jesus now than I probably ever have been.
Anything that can help us stop and reflect about how we're making the decisions about our lives, like Wayfinder does, I think can be very powerful.
Yeah, it's great. You just need to do it. I'm telling you right now, you need to do it. And you need to do it with other people. If you're in a group context, do it with them because they're going to help you be aware of things you wouldn't have been aware of before. You might be harder on yourself and lower on your score than they would, and they'll speak into that with you. They'll help you kind of bounce things off. And it's difficult. It's difficult. And the people who will grow are people who will do something like that, and it will go through difficulty to elevate, to get above the norm. Because who wants normal in here? Who wants average? I'm curious. Is there anybody in here who's average? Who's average in here? Anyone in here average? It's amazing. A whole room of people. No one ever thinks they're average. Who never raises their hand? Go ahead and raise your hand if you never raise your hand for anything. To get beyond normal, we've got to go through difficulty. And one discipline is to define where you are. The second discipline is the discipline of delay. The discipline of delay. In the Bible, there's a phrase that comes up a number of times, waiting on the Lord. Waiting on the Lord. And it almost sounds like come on, God, let's go. Come on. Like you would your three-year-old. You're trying to get your three-year-old. You got his shoes on. Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go, let's go. Come on, God, I'm moving here. Come on. No, it's not what it means. It doesn't mean that God is slow. It doesn't mean that God doesn't get with the program. It means that there are certain things that I want that I just can't have until God says, okay. It means there's certain things that I can't do on my own power that I need the power of God to do. And so therefore, I have to be okay waiting or delaying things. And sometimes we intentionally, for spiritual growth purposes, will intentionally not do something we could do right now because we have to delay it. We have to wait. The most vibrant example of this in my life recently comes from a vacation of a lifetime I've taken. Now, vacation of a lifetime doesn't mean the best vacation I've ever had, but it's the one that I've been planning for more of my lifetime than any other. In fact, now that's over, I'm not even sure what my next trip of a lifetime would be. I can't, because this one's been like on my docket for decades. New Zealand is what it is. New Zealand's always fascinated me, especially when Lord of the Rings came out and I found out that all that scenery was in New Zealand. You remember Mount Doom? Yes, Mount Doom was inspired by an actual mountain in New Zealand, a very, very steep mountain, the mountain that Samwise pulled Frodo up. So like, I can't carry the ring, but I can carry you. All the Lord of the Ring geeks are going, oh, that's not exactly what he said. He said something different, whatever it is. You know, I saw that, I was like, oh, that's why I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. I've all, done, I'm going. The problem is, God asked me to be part of a church that keeps having freaking building campaigns. So this has been on my list for decades, and I've gone through four, our Tome family has gone through four building campaigns here at Crossroads, where each time God has asked for all of our savings or a large enough part of our savings that we couldn't fund the trip and additional income so we couldn't build our savings back up again to be able to go. So it's been a constant delay, putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. And man, am I ever glad that we delayed? Because had I gone any other time earlier, I wouldn't have been ready for it. Wouldn't have been ready. I wouldn't have been able to go with the group that we're a part of right now. We had the right people at the right time. Had I gone when Lib and I first had the desire a long, long time ago, we would have gone by ourselves on a stupid tour bus or maybe that's your speed. It would have been our speed, or just on some ferry around the islands or some cruise. We would have done something like that. We would have never had the right people to do it with, and we would have never camped throughout all of New Zealand. We did that. We actually had these vehicles that have these rooftop tents on the vehicles, and we rented the vehicles, cruised all the way through and camped, and had we gone earlier, I wouldn't have been a proficient camper like I am now. We camped for 2 weeks straight. All those meals, we only ate at a restaurant, I think, three times in 2 weeks for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because I wasn't prepared for it earlier on. And the money cost way, way more than I thought it would. Way, I'm glad to make the amount of money I have now and I went versus the amount of money I made 15 years ago. I'm just telling you this. New Zealand, just hold on. 95% of everything in New Zealand you can get in the American West for 5% of the price. So if you want to do New Zealand sometime, at first I'd say, hey, have you exhausted the American West? You've gone to the Grand Canyon, you've gone to the Rockies, have you gone to Utah, have you gone to, you know, do those things first, and then if you want more, great, New Zealand. And I'm glad I went. It was amazing. It was the ability to go to see a beach on kayaks where no one else was, and to actually fall asleep, have a nap in the middle of the afternoon you weren't planning on, just because you're on your own private beach that you kayak to, and actually it was a very, very difficult kayak, by the way, incredibly difficult kayak. To go up Mount Doom itself was pretty crazy. Let me talk about the third discipline. I'll tell you about Mount Doom. The third discipline is the discipline of departure. The discipline of departure. It's the discipline of, okay, I know where I am right now. I am a seeker, or I am divorced, or I am newly married, or I am a male, or I am an athlete, or whatever it is. I know I've defined where I am right now. That's one thing. It's another thing to go, okay, I'm going to wait because I'm not ready for X, Y, Z. I'm going to wait. There's something in the delay. There's something in the waiting. There's something in that time period, there being spiritual growth there. And then there's something totally different when you actually chop, chop, you go, when you depart. I kept trying to figure a reason to put off New Zealand. We put it off a number of times, and even this time, like, oh my gosh, it's going to cost that much. How much are those vehicles? Oh, how? Oh, we got a new grandbaby right now. Maybe we can't go right now. We've got this grand new child. Oh no, we've got a Crossroads dealing with this. So there's always a reason to not go. Always is, and there's always a reason for you not to spiritually grow, and you spiritually growing always means you doing something you don't want to do. Let me say it again. You spiritually growing always means you doing something you don't want to do. You will spiritually grow if you ever tithe, give 10% of your income away, and you will never want to do that initially. You will spiritually grow if you spend a portion of every day on your knees before God in silence, and before you've ever done that, you will never want to do it if you've never done it before. You will spiritually grow if you choose to get into a Bible reading plan where you read and digest a section of the scriptures every day, and we never want to do that initially. We never do. You will grow spiritually if you will put yourself in significant friendships where someone will tell you something about yourself that you don't want to hear, and they'll tell you, dude, you're wrong. You're wrong. You keep doing this, and you're just wrong. And no one wants to hear that at all. It's difficult, and you won't grow unless it happens. We have to depart. We have to go. So I walk into this national park office in New Zealand, and trying to figure out exactly where Mount Doom, I knew where Mount Doom was. I did all the, it's actually Mount Ngarahwe or something like that. I can't pronounce it. It's N-G-U-A, some other vowels and consonants, and it's in there. So I had it on the GPS. I'd figured out, I had our whole route mapped out because I've been working on this for a long time, right? So I just didn't know exactly where the trailhead is. Where is that? So the day before we were going to go hike this, went into the New Zealand National Park office, this is where this place is, and I said, hey, where do I pick up the trail for Mount Ngarahwe, Mount Doom, whatever it is? And National Park Ranger said, well, we prefer people not do that hike. I was like, well, oh, really? Why is that? Well, it's really dangerous. It's really dangerous, and We've taken down the signs, and we just prefer you not do it. I said, is it illegal to climb it? He said, no, it's not illegal. We just discourage it because it's really unsafe. And that's when I was, oh, I know you. I've been in so many National Park Ranger offices. America, land of the fear. I get you. America, we have to have a hand railing every hike we have in a national park or else you can't go. I understand. America's thing of fear is so, I've been to every national park and it's all like, let's dumb it down, make it as easy as possible for everybody because we can't have anybody possibly having any risk. So I looked at her like, oh, you're national. Of course you would say that. So fine. So I knew if we got on this trail, which is one of the top six hikes in the world, the Alpine Trail, we would come to a place where I would see Mount Doom. There probably was a trail, even though the sign's not down, we wouldn't be breaking any laws, so we're going to do it. So away we go. So we go, we're climbing. Finally, we come, and I see some guys going up this hill, and I'm going, hey, is this the main trail for Mount Doom? They said, yeah, well, it's the easiest one. I said, oh, great. And so we started off on this thing, and not long after that, I realized there's a massive difference between a park ranger in New Zealand and a park ranger in the United States. Because park rangers in the United States lie, or they have no idea of the threshold of what difficulty you can deal with. New Zealand people, no, they get it. They really get it. Like, their speed limits in New Zealand, like, we couldn't drive the speed limit. It was awesome. Seriously, 100 kilometers an hour? I'm going like, you got to be kidding me. How can you make these? It was not possible to go the speed limit. That's the kind of speed limits I like. Not like, you can go way up here, but we'd just rather you'd be right here. Because we were doing it. No, that was like, dude, whew. Ever go to a personal trainer or go to some workout class, boot camp, and they have to do things called mountain climbers? I hate them. They're so stupid, right? You're down and you're like, you got to go like this. And the whole time you're doing it, you're going, why am I doing this? I will never do this. I'm probably going to throw my back out. This makes no sense at all. This is not real world, right? You keep doing this until you do Mount Doom. Then you do mountain climbers. It's a 45-degree incline. And here you see me doing mountain climbers. This is after we spent a half an hour going sideways on the mountain because the sand that we were on was giving way. We were making like 2 inches at a time. So we spent a half an hour to get over to the rocks, and then we did mountain climbers up above the cloud line. And while we were up there looking out over all it was, I kept going, this is difficult. Why are we doing it? Why have we departed? Why have we actually moved and gone on? And remembered that the last mountain I climbed, I've climbed two mountains in my life. The largest peak in Nicaragua, the first time I went to Nicaragua, and now this mountain. There's two mountains. And after doing two mountains, I got to tell you, I don't know what the heck we're talking about when we talk about mountaintop experience. Oh, I just had this mountaintop experience. I just ask you, have you ever been to the top of the mountain? I'll tell you, both situations, it sucked. In Nicaragua, we got to the top of the mountain and like we couldn't be there for more than 5 minutes because these massive bugs were dive bombing into our mouths and nostrils. No lie. You were like, they were like, get down, take a picture, get down. It was awful. Here we get the top, and yeah, we see this little crater where Frodo threw the ring in, and so we had a couple of people take their wedding rings that were the cheap rubber ones and throw them into the thing, kind of like Lord of the Rings. And it was kind of cool being up there where the rock was hot because there's lava still going underneath. So the rock was kind of, but we got up there, it was like, yeah, we gotta go because it's gonna be dark for too long, and we could die. I mean, honestly, that's the way we felt. Like amazing, we got up here, no one died. We still got to get all the way down. We took off going down. So when we talk about mountaintop experience, I've got two mountaintops I've been, and I'm just telling one guy going, it ain't that great at the top. Just not. What you have to like is you have to like the journey. You have to convince yourself that the journey is worth it, that I'm enjoying this journey. One of the guys with us is a climber, hiker, much more than I am, and he said, you know, this is what's called embracing the suck. So it's a hiking trip. You just embrace the suck. You say, it is what it is. I'm not going to try to. I'm just going to embrace it. You know, the Bible talks about embracing the suck, not necessarily in that nomenclature, but in Philippians chapter 3, verse 12 and following, the Apostle Paul says this, not that I have already obtained this, the mountaintop, or am already perfect, but I press on to make it my own. I embrace the suck, he says, because Christ Jesus has made me his own. He's defined me. Brothers, I do not consider that I have made it my own, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, forgetting the difficulty that lies behind, and straining forward to what lies ahead. Straining, what's that mean? It's difficult. I'm straining. I want something more. I want to get there. I press on towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus to spiritually grow. We have to press. We have to not think that when there's difficulty, something is wrong or God has abandoned me or I'm following the wrong God. No, when there's difficulty, I get to climb. When there's difficulty, I get to find something out about myself. When there's difficulty, I get to find something out about God. Found the same exact thing of departing when I went to Nicaragua. I haven't been to a go trip for a while. I was so excited. Liv and I went with about 100 college students and others. It was great. It was great. And it was really difficult. Really difficult. And it was great. We dug these trenches for water lines. And the first part was, this is great. This nice soft dirt, this dirt road is great. We were laughing, it was great. And we busted that out real quick. And then we had to go back where the Y was. And that was a gravel road. That was not great. Getting through that 4 to 5 inches of gravel so we could dig a trench up to about our hip. it was just backbreaker. It was difficult. And so every time I was hitting that with the pick or shoveling or whatever, I knew at some point there would be a breakthrough. At some point, we're going to hit soft dirt again. At some point, but we have to embrace the suck right now. We have to get through the difficulty. And the truth is, friends, a lot of us in here, you're close. You're really close. You are. Keep hitting away at the rock. You're close. You have to endure. You've got to press on to what's there. You're almost to a new place. You're almost there. Keep hitting. Keep going. We had a great time in Nicaragua. So it was. Some was difficult, some was fun. Like difficult climbing up another volcano, fun coming down on sleds. Awesome. Difficult grabbing a pig by his ears. Fun when you let him down and say, "I've never done that before. That was awesome. I've never picked up a pig and heard him go wee wee." Never. That's awesome. It's like Deliverance. Remember that movie? It was for real, man. It was for real. Departing. The last one, discipline, is the discipline of distraction. The discipline of distraction. When we were going up Mount Doom, we thought we prepared for it. We wanted good gear, right? So we said, let's get the right hiking boots that we need for this trip, because we do a lot of hiking and stuff. So Lib and I went out and bought them, and we weren't stupid. We knew that you got to break them in, because you know you got to, when you're out in the trail, you don't want to break them in the trail. So I would wear my hiking boots to work for a couple weeks. They looked really stupid. They didn't go with clothes I was wearing. Not that I really care about that generally, but nonetheless, I had these big hiking boots on. I wore them for a couple weeks, and I worked on them out in the yard, just all over the place. It was good. It was great. Lib did her thing with it. It was good. I went, and I would do the elliptical at the workout place with hiking boots on and all that kind of stuff. It was it was good. What I didn't really figure out, hello, that doing this with your boots is not the same as this, which is a 45-degree mountain climbers, right? When you're going 45, it's like, we could do all these activities. Look at these activities. It was like, your foot's in a different position when you're doing mountain climbers going up. And so we both got blisters. Take off our shoes and socks, putting like this blister tape on it and all this kind of stuff. And I found that the more I thought about the blisters, the worse the blisters were. I had to learn the discipline of distracting myself from the pain I was in by simply thinking about what the summit might be like. Thinking about why I needed to have my hand on my wife's rear end going up so that she doesn't fall down as we climbed up that thing. And the distraction takes away the pain and difficulty. I know that depression for many of us is a neurological, chemical, physiological, medical thing. I know that. So I use the term generally when I talk about depression. The most depressed people tend to be those who think about themselves, who think about their own current woes, who think about their own current problems. We have to learn to be distracted by that and get outside of that. And when our mind thinks about a summit or our mind thinks about anything else, those difficulties tend to drop away. They just go away. But we can choose to think about the difficulty, or we can choose to think about Jesus, think about God, think about the future we want, think about something that's totally different. Book of Proverbs, chapter 23, verse 7, it says, "As a man or woman thinketh, so is he or she." As a man thinketh, so is he. As a woman thinketh, so is he. So guess what? If you think to yourself, "Oh, these blisters are so bad, I'm not going to be able to get up because I'm screwed. I got blisters. I can't get up." Guess what? You will not get up if you think that about your blisters. You won't. If you come into a crossroads, you go, "Oh, I bet this is going to be another boring service." It will be, as you think it is. If you say to yourself, "I'm getting married, but I know every man in my family has had a divorce, and I'm going to get divorced too. I just don't." Guess what? You'll have a divorce. You'll have a divorce. If you think, "I know my kids. My kids are never going to listen to my voice. My kids are just always going to be acting out. They're never going to take me seriously." Then your kids will never take you seriously. If you say to yourself, "I'm going to lose weight. I've said that before. I'm not going to lose weight." Guess what? You're not going to lose weight. As a man thinketh, so is he. As a woman thinketh, so is she. You have to willfully distract yourself from the thing that's not a good thought to see and grab something else. It's the discipline of distraction. Psalm chapter 34, verse 18, the last verse I'll share with you today, says, "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit." The Lord's near the broken heart and saves the crushed in spirit. Maybe the most compelling argument that I have for you to embrace difficulty and to rise above normal is that God is uniquely there in a way that he's not in other places. Jesus had an incredibly painful life. At least the 3 years that are detailed in the New Testament of when he went public with his ministry. It was incredibly painful. It was incredibly difficult. It was. And he never said, "Oh no, things are difficult. I guess there's no God now. I guess I need to find some other spirituality." No, he knew that difficulty goes with getting close to God. Anything that's of value, you're going to go through difficulty. Anything you're proud of in your life and you're happy where it is right now, you know, you can go in your mind back to some time and you can say, "I pressed through there." So to press through spiritually means we embrace that difficulty is part of the game. And maybe, just maybe, the reason why we feel him so much in times of difficulty, or we want him so much in some times of difficulty, is because he says, "I understand that because I've been there for that. I've never had stock options," Jesus would say. "I've never had a great marriage. I never had millions in the bank. But you want to talk about difficulty? I got you on that, brother. I know what that's like." And so that's why I believe Jesus is uniquely close to the brokenhearted, uniquely close to those who are in times of difficulty. And when would you grow more than when Jesus is close to you? Friends, embrace the suck. Rise above where everybody else is. Lift the lid on your life. Have a different attitude. Define where you are. Get away from you or depart. And embrace that growing spiritually is an amazing adventure.
Thanks for joining us today. Like Brian said, take the Wayfinder. It's quick, it's easy. You'll benefit from it massively. And go over the results of somebody that you trust. If you need somebody, or if you just wanna get connected into community at Crossroads, click the chat button on our website. They would love, love, love to help you do that. Next week, we start a brand new series called Humanity, The Path to Glory. We will see you then.
God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. The supreme masterpiece of all creation. Humans. The untarnished breath of the eternal in perfect balance with the motley dust of the earth. Living, breathing, brilliant icons of the unseen God. Designed to share his glory with all creation. Explore with us what it means to be fully human.